Good morning and welcome to your morning conversation. And with us this morning, a special guest in the studios, Lieutenant Governor of the State of Missouri, Mike Parson. And Mike, good to have you with us this morning.
Good to be here, John. Good to be on campus this morning.
Now, Mike, you were on campus last night with the Distinguished Lecture Series, giving a lecture at the Charles Johnson Theater. And first of all, just kind of talk a bit about some of the things you wanted to get across during that particular lecture.
You know, I first of all, it was an honor to be able to be asked to be part of that lecture series. And one of the things that I really wanted to get across, especially to the audience there that night, is that follow your dreams. All things are possible. You just have to have the will to try it and the faith to believe you can sometimes. And that really the message last night was to let people know from where you come from what part of life you come from, that you can reach your goals if you have those goals in mind and you work hard and you can obtain them. And I think the other thing that I wanted to say to most people last night, I want to tell them a little bit about the Lieutenant Governor's office, because most people don't know what the Lieutenant Governor does in the state of Missouri. So we got to highlight that a little bit and what we're doing and why we're so proud and excited to be the Lieutenant Governor of the state of Missouri. So it was a great opportunity to share that last night.
Now, looking at your bio, might let people know a little bit about you if they don't already, but you're not new to state government after being a sheriff in Polk County, I believe, for a number of years from 93 to 2005. Former House of Representative, also a state senator as well before running for Lieutenant Governor in 2016.
Right. Well, you know what? The political career really started at the sheriff's office. And when I was in the Army, I was in the military police corps, and I worked for the Criminal Investigation Division of the Army. So when I come out and I went back and I bought a business and everything, the old sheriff retired, and they come down one day and says, hey, would you be interested in being sheriff? So I really wanted to take a country boy sheriff's department and really make it into a professional agency. And I had the opportunity to do that, and I'm so proud of that accomplishment. And from there, that's kind of how political office started. And I kind of got where I really understood what being a public servant was about. And I think from then on, that's just how the House of Representatives went, the Senate, and now the Lieutenant Governor. And I always remember that first election where I came from, because I always tell people that was the most important election that I ever had. And I'm honored to be the Lieutenant Governor. But truly on the local levels, when you elect people, those are the people that know you best. Those are the people you go to church with, your kids go to school with their kids, you go to the grocery stores. And so that's how it all started. And at the end of the day, for no more or for no less, it's just being a public servant is what my job's about, and I enjoy doing it.
If I understand right, prior to running for Lieutenant Governor, you had considered running for the governor's position. What were some of the reasons you decided to maybe change your focus and run for Lieutenant Governor?
Well, you know, sometimes you have to, I guess, reel in your emotions. Number one, I was frustrated with the way the process worked about how people were getting elected to office by destroying one another, by really trying to destroy your opponents instead of ever talking about yourself and why you're qualified, that you spend more money trying to tell how bad your opponent is. And I was really frustrated with that, and I wanted to prove that somebody could go out there and win an election by not doing that. Unfortunately, at the time, there was four or five candidates in the governor's race then. There was a couple from my own home area. And to be successful in the state, you couldn't have two people coming from southwest Missouri and expect to be competitive. And I didn't have the money, frankly. I couldn't raise the money at the time to compete in the governor's race. So I thought I could still get to do my message if I dropped down the lieutenant governor's race. And, you know, there's a purpose for everything, the way things turn out, and it just happened to be the right move for me, and I think it was the right decision I made at the time.
It seems like a lot of people may have some misconceptions about the lieutenant governor's position and sometimes don't hear a lot about that position in between elections. What are some of the things that you see your role as lieutenant governor and maybe some of the things you might want to change as far as the role of lieutenant governor in the state of Missouri?
Well, I think you need to be more active as lieutenant governor. I think we've always taken that for granted, per se, what the lieutenant governor does. But the lieutenant governor can be about as active as you want to be. A matter of fact, when I first went into office, part of the thing I'm to do is to advocate for veterans. That's one of my jobs. And we opened an eight-month investigation into the veterans home, the St. Louis Veterans Home, and found many discrepancies there, some real problems there with taking care of veterans, all the way from abuse to, you know, wrong medications to wrong advice to families and things. And we really changed that. And we actually, at the end of the day, the administrator was gone. Different people on the Veterans Commission was replaced. But, I mean, those are the kind of things that I think you need to step up to the plate and do as the lieutenant governor. So that was a major issue we did. The other thing is Buy Missouri, that we're getting to promote Missouri businesses across the state. Also tourism. Second largest industry in the state, and my job is to go out and promote tourism. So, and that's something I enjoy doing. You get to go out and showcase Missouri, whether it be football teams or whether it be basketball. And, of course, sitting here in your home turf, I don't need to tell you about football teams and athletics here on this campus. But you get to do that. And then I advocate for seniors every day. And, you know, that's something to me that times are changing for the senior population. And you know, the old days when somebody just sits on a front porch and sits in a rocking chair is over. You know, most people want to live very active lives up into their 80s time frame. And my job is to make sure that they have the opportunity to do that. So those are just some of the things. And then I'm a farm boy at heart. I still run a farm back home, and agriculture being the number one industry. I'm proud that I'm the only statewide elected official in the state that comes from an agriculture background. So every day we're promoting agriculture and tourism and veterans and seniors. And I sit on 18 different boards and commissions. So you stay busy, busier than most people know.
I know one thing that came out about the lieutenant governor's office after he took over, just some budget issues, and obviously we well know of budget situations on the Northwest Missouri State Campus as well, but has some of those issues with your office been rectified a little bit?
Well, you know, we're working on it. We're hoping so because the lieutenant governor's office doesn't have a lot of funding at this point compared to a lot of the other statewides. But the only thing we're asking for is just to make sure we can do our job and be adequate in what we're doing as lieutenant governors. But we're working on those. Those things will come about to what we're going to do, and they're taking shape. They're taking shape. And this year's been quite a year, so we'll see how it all comes out. But right now, the lieutenant governor, we're doing fine. You know, I knew what the job was when I took it, and we're just going to keep going forward with what we're doing.
From your position, being a member of the House of Representatives as well as the state Senate before becoming lieutenant governor, you have an opportunity, maybe more so than some, to kind of see what's going on in the General Assembly, in particular the session that's currently going on right now. And what would you say are some of the main things that you're seeing out of this year's session and some of the main issues right now?
I think, needless to say, we all know there's distractions this year, what's going on at the state level. But the legislature have kept their nose to the grindstone, and they keep working, and they keep, to me, doing product, some good productive work out of there. I think you're going to see, like, an education arena. I think you're going to see some things change there for the better. I think we're going to be funding more of our institutions at a higher level than what was predicted. And I think that's important because one of the two major issues facing the state of Missouri, one's infrastructure. We have to do something with our transportation systems, our highways, our bridges, our airports, our rail. And the other thing is a skilled workforce and a workforce out there. So you really can't start cutting funding for education and all of a sudden we're so far behind on getting people out there in the workforce. That just won't work. And we got to figure out a solution to getting people to have the skills to meet the workforce demands that are out there. So I've been an advocate all along that we got to figure out some way to make sure our students have a highway to get to that, to get to those good jobs out there in that market. And it's going to come through education, whether it's a four-year institution, whether it's a tech school, whether it's 2 years. But we got to fund that. Other states have done that, and it's been very productive for them. But we can't just keep frankly, we just can't keep cutting and cutting and cutting and expecting at the end of the day we can meet the demands of the future.
Has education been, for lack of a better term, kind of the low-hanging fruit on the budget hierarchy there, where it's been something that's been relatively easy for representative senators to see that as an area that can be cut and maybe not affect their constituency as much, despite the fact that it is such an important part of the state?
Yeah. Well, John, I think there's a few large pools of money, education being one, mental health being one, social services being another one. I mean, you look at those pools of money, those are large pools. So it's almost easier to go up there and take something out of one of those budgeted items to do that. But I think you got to be careful when you do that because, again, there's a reason those budgets are the way they are. And what is the end result if you do that? I mean, realistically, are you just saving money for the campus? Are you saving money for the taxpayers? But the underlying goal should be, is are you preparing these students for when they get out of this university, when they get out of K through 12, when they get out of a university, a four-year institution versus a two-year, are they being prepared? And it takes so much money to operate. And when I did the bonding bill around the state, I think it was about 4 years ago, for all the universities and the state buildings around there, you know, there's definitely a need out here to try to make sure to maintain our campuses. And you're sitting on a campus that, you know, for better terms, has been around a while. You know, and it takes a lot of maintenance. You know, you have to be energy efficient. You have to maintain all that stuff. And those costs keep going up. At the same time, I don't think we can cut and put the burden on the back of our education institutions and expect to move forward in the state.
One of the things that came out last week with the state Senate was a tax cut bill that's been called maybe the largest tax cut bill in the history of the state, coming at a time when we're struggling with the budget a little bit. Kansas has had a similar type of bill in the past that they've struggled after that was passed to make some ends meet. How can this tax bill, obviously there's still a long way to go. It has to go through the House and a few other steps before it could possibly become law. But what are some of the things that can be done, or are they looking at to do that would make this different than what we're seeing other states like Kansas do?
Well, number one, I think what you said a while ago is important for the listeners to realize that's a long way from a finish line. You know, that was the first phase of it. I don't expect that to come out in the form it is now at all. I think there'll be multiple changes to that before it ever comes to a true vote in the Senate. So I think there'll be a lot of changes made in that. There's some things in there that I think are okay to take a look at. But again, you got to be very careful because right now the state of Missouri, one side of us were making cuts. And when you're kind of predicting that, hey, this money's going to come in the future, which I hope it does, but that is a prediction. And you know, in the state level, when you budget, you've got so much money to work with to pay the bills, and at the end of the day, you got to do that. So you don't want to make it where you can't pay the bills, because then we do have real problems. And Kansas had real problems. You brought it up. So you don't want to follow suit with them. So I think we got to move cautiously when we talk about a tax cut bill or a tax reform to make sure it is a true reform and a true tax cut. You know, and a perfect comparison to that, or maybe not a perfect comparison, but when President Trump, whether you're a supporter of President Trump or not, the tax cut bill really does have an effect on everyday people out here working. And if you can really do that by putting money in their pockets, I do believe that is a much better way of doing that than sending it to Washington, D.C. So anytime you're talking tax cuts, you got to make sure there's a way to balance that. And you just got to make sure you don't get yourself you don't want to look short term. You want to make sure if you're going to do a tax cut or a tax reform, that something can last longevity-wise, that 10 years from now you can sustain that. Because you don't want to do it like Kansas did, and all of a sudden, 1-2 years into it, you're in trouble. We don't want that.
And isn't there a risk, too, of having the cuts come in, but if it takes a little bit longer for the revenue to come in, you've got that in-between time there where, you're looking at, especially, I guess, in particular with state jobs, where some of those jobs would have to be cut because the revenue hasn't started to come in at that point.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. Depending on where that revenue situation comes in, you know, so those are these things you have to look at. But, yeah, you know, you're actually on a prediction to saying, okay, this revenue is going to come in, and what happens if it don't? You know, and that should always be plan B that we have, and not just say, well, we're basing everything on what could happen, because we don't know if that's going to happen.
Now, another issue right now that's really a nationwide issue that we've seen in discussion in the state of Missouri as well deals with Second Amendment rights, and I know that's been an area that as a legislator you were active in as far as ensuring gun rights in the state of Missouri. How do you see the current discussions going on just taking place since everything that took place in Florida and maybe the push right now that we're seeing on not only campuses but just around the nation over this type of discussion? What type of discussion do you feel needs to be made with this?
Well, I think, first of all, you know, I'm a true believer in the Second Amendment, that we got to protect the Second Amendment. You know, I think what's happened is we see across our country, and Florida is a perfect example of what just happened. Florida legislation went in there and took it some looks at legislation, new legislation that they passed. I think we always need to take a closer look at the mental health issues. And we really need to look, okay, who are the people that are involved in these shootings and why? Who were they? And why was it? An example of that, I know they've done one study. Most of them are white males, no father, and they've had problems before, society problems fitting into society that we knew that. So how do we track that? I think Florida took a look at the mental health issues. I think if there's ever you've had a problem mentally, I think you need to take a look about saying, hey, maybe we do need to take those guns away till we see what that is. But first you got to define what is a mental health issue for that person. But I think there's things you can look at to do that we can change. I don't know that you necessarily have to say, I'm a Second Amendment guy, I'm never going to change, period, or you're not, and you say, okay. You know, so I think we got to take a look at that and see what the best thing is to do on that. But I think it's an issue that needs to be talked about and discussed. But I don't think, like I said, I don't think you can take the radical right or the radical left and expect any changes. I think it's going to be people in the middle that figure out, hey, is there some way we do this better? It's what we all should be looking at.
Is some of the frustration that you hear from maybe both sides on this issue, just dealing with a lot, I think the side in particular, those that are pushing for stricter gun issues, come out and say that they're frustrated that they hear from the legislators that after an incident happens, well, now it's not the right time to talk about this, but then nothing's done until another one of these comes along. Is there maybe a way where these discussions can take place at some point to make changes that either need to be made or have meaningful discussions?
Yeah. Well, I think the one thing we got to do is you got to have, for example, the shooting in Florida, I think you have to have that discussion. I mean, I don't think you can just say, hey, we're not going to do anything with that. And we got to figure out what those solutions are at that point. How we're going to handle that. But I don't think we need to be afraid to talk about those issues. And I think you can still protect people's fundamental Second Amendment rights. But it doesn't necessarily mean you have to do a lot of things drastically the other way either to do that.
Well, Lieutenant Governor Parsons, it's been a pleasure having you with us on campus last night as well as this morning, and look forward to talking to you in the future.
Good to be here, John. Thanks for having me on this morning.
Oh, you bet. That's the Missouri Lieutenant Governor, Mike Parsons. I'm John Coffey, and that's your Morning Conversation.